You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. And we are back on Taco Tuesday. And this is a very interesting Taco Tuesday we have, with plenty of Ravens news breaking over the last 24 hours. And here to break it all down with me is Spencer Schultz from Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, tough loss for Baltimore on Sunday. Another tough 24 hours on Monday. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. The Ravens have to hang in there tough. It's a lot. The Ravens... The content doesn't stop, man. They make headlines. They have big days, big, you know, trade deadlines, big off-season scandal, Earl Thomas, and, you know, everybody talks about Lamar Jackson. There's COVID now. They're losing games. They're winning games. It's a lot. The Ravens are overstimulating us Ravens fans at this point. So it's exciting in ways. It's disappointing in others. It's fun. It's sad. It's difficult to watch. It's fun. So it's a lot. The Ravens are loading up our Thanksgiving plates, metaphorically and quite literally. So it's a lot to handle.
Yeah, absolutely. This game on Thanksgiving is still going to be played. So Thanksgiving with lots of football for the people of Baltimore. But Spencer, I do want to talk a little bit about this Pittsburgh Steelers game, but not necessarily what's going to go on in the game, but the injuries and really COVID that has really impacted Baltimore over these last 24 hours. The big news of yesterday was that running backs Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins have both tested positive for the virus. They will be placed on the COVID list. They cannot play for 10 days, so that definitely means that they will be out for this game coming up against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Spencer, this is something that, you know, the Ravens have had their go with COVID and everything. And, you know, it's just another go round for them with this virus. And with everything that's going on with the NFL this season and with the Ravens in general, with injuries and with the defense underperforming in some aspects, the offense underperforming, they look good, they don't look good. Again, you mentioned it's such a stimulating team, this Ravens team is. What was your overall reaction when you heard the news that J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram will not be available for the Steelers game, and what impact does it have on the personnel and the game plan for Baltimore's offense?
Yeah, the Ravens have had their go with COVID. Many teams have, and it's really starting to take its toll. At the same time, I think that this coaching staff needs to recognize how many young, inexperienced, cheap backup kind of guys, kind of some quadruple A, so to speak, guys getting mixed into the lineup. And at this point, you need to simplify things. The mass substitutions and personnel changes mid drive, the great symphony that goes on, you know, from play to play, from drive to drive, needs to come to a little bit of a halt. I think at this point, you got to stick some guys on the field and let them get a rhythm. If a couple plays go well, there's an instance where, you know, you complete a first down through the air and have a little bit of a successful run play or something, with, let's say, you know, 12 personnel or whoever's on the field, roll with it, man. Let them keep going. If you can get your foot on the gas pedal, press down on the accelerator and see what you can do instead of kind of stalling things out, slowing things down. I think some tempo might force defenses to be a little more honest. When you think about when the Ravens defense is playing well, what do teams do? They go hurry up. They go no huddle. So they can kind of take some of the complexities out of the Ravens defense, force them to be a little bit more basic. So I think the Ravens need to keep it a little simple for themselves. There's a multitude of plays where there's just too much going on early in this Titans game. You end up seeing Gus Edwards comes in motion across first and goal, I believe early second quarter, and just a busted play. And then down late in the game, you're driving. And then the offense doesn't get set. They're late getting to the line, whatever it is. And the center ends up snapping the ball too early, and you're shooting yourself in the foot there. So I think against the Steelers, you know, Dobbins had a great game, and it felt like it was, you know, the, okay, it's Dobbins time. And of course he just ends up unfortunately coming down with COVID. So it's going to be the Hill and Edwards show. And it's crazy, man. I mean, Justice Hill made plays on special teams. He looked feisty. He looked ready. He looked fast, aggressive, physical, all the positive adjectives you want to use about his play on special teams. So maybe he's able to translate and have some juice on the field, but it's just difficult when guys just can't catch a rhythm. There's COVID, there's injuries, there's, you know, turnovers or balls don't bounce their way. It is what it is. But at this point, the mantra of the Ravens last year of John Harbaugh specifically was good. You know, da-da-da-da-da happens, good. So-and-so happens, good. You want adversity? Well, you've got it, John Harbaugh. Here's the time for your poetic, you know, Shakespearean, Emery, whatever you want to call it, or Ernest Hemingway type quotes he likes to bring out, Churchill, all that kind of stuff that Harbaugh loves. Well, it's served up on a platter for you right now, Mr. Harbaugh. Let's see what you can do on a short week. It's difficult maybe to get the juices flowing as they're in intensive protocol with the facility shut down and then doing some walkthroughs with masks on and things. But if you got to get up, you know, if you struggle to get your guys up for Steelers week on Thanksgiving in front of a national audience, and I don't know what to tell you, the football gods have smited the Ravens, but that's football. You know, Boyle goes down, Stanley goes down, these things happen. So you got to overcome it. The good ones do, and the great ones always do. So at this point, keep it simple. Pick up some tempo, and let's see what Lamar Jackson can do, man. It's time. It felt like he threw the ball a ton in this game. 29 attempts, like 34 dropbacks, maybe 33 dropbacks, I believe, right in that department. It's nothing. It's really nothing. Cam Newton, Deshaun Watson play a game that I covered for Sports Info Solutions today, and you know it was 50-plus dropbacks for each of those guys, and they made things happen. So those are guys that, you know, people love to compare Lamar to, whatever. And put the ball in Lamar's hands. Let's see what can go down. He hasn't been great, I don't think. I don't think he's been awful. He's been somewhere in between and mediocre to good. So it's time to get it going. And there's guys that feel like they're emerging a little bit. Dez Bryant looks feisty. You know, Willie Snead's been strong. Marquise Brown has struggled. Mark Andrews has started to kind of overcome the incredible concentration the defenses lay on him and came up with a big touchdown. So guys like that, you got to figure out who the best 11 is, man, or the best 12, 13, and let them roll. It's time to kind of cut some of the fat, trim some of the fat from this offense, because you have to. You have to trim the playbook. You have to trim some of the complexities. You don't have your first-team offense. You've got some ragtag guys. The Ravens don't have a glorious, you know, pedigree offensive line right now. They got Will Holden, DJ Fluker splitting snaps, Pat McCary at center, Ben Powers with his first start. These guys aren't, you know, how many of these offensive linemen are starting around the league that are like a unanimous starter? To me, it's just Orlando Brown. So you got to recognize that, dial up the quick passing game and let loose. So we'll see what they do against the Steelers. They moved the ball really well against the Steelers when they played a couple of weeks ago. If they can limit those turnovers, keep at it. We'll see. This is a two-team situation. The Ravens and the Steelers know each other. They give each other trouble. They play close games historically, and I've been really excited for this game as a fan for a long time. And it's unfortunate that you got a guy like Dobbins emerge and he gets cut short, and Brandon Williams feels like he's rested up maybe and might be able to come back. He was doubtful last week. He didn't have to go on IR or anything, but he can't play now. So excuses are easy, but there's no excuses when you win. You don't need to make excuses for winning football games. So it's, you know, the difference between treading water and getting onto land. And the Ravens have been flirting with it for quite some time. They, you know, almost blow a game against the Eagles. They had a lead in against the Steelers. They had a lead against the Titans. They, you know, played a tough game in a monsoon in New England. All that adversity that people kind of cried for when they felt like the Ravens were coasting and rested their starters and didn't take the Titans seriously, yada, yada, yada. You asked for it. You asked for adversity. Here it is. And it's a 6-4 football team with a lot to prove. And they're reaching the apex of the season, that critical point.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something, Spencer, where I look at the whole COVID thing and say, you know, you see Mark Ingram get the virus and you see J.K. Dobbins get the virus. But then you see Gus Edwards and Justice Hill, who apparently are not deemed close contacts, but then Brandon Williams is deemed a close contact. Again, his second go-around with this whole COVID list thing. Do you see, Spencer, any way that Edwards or Hill couldn't be a close contact? Or is this just maybe the NFL's way of saying, look, these two can't play each other if the Ravens literally have one running back on their roster because they can't sign anybody if the whole COVID protocol thing is what it is because they have to go through 5 days of testing. They can't be with the team. And that's a fair thing to do. But with only Tyson Williams being on the practice squad, that will be their only running back. What do you make of Gus Edwards and Justice Hill not being placed on the COVID list as close contacts?
I don't know how it works exactly. I mean, I know that they have their wrist monitors and that's how they do it, but it doesn't quite make sense. I guess the Ravens really do a good job spacing out in positional meetings. And I'm not sure how Brandon Williams fits into the equation there, but he does. So that's a insult to injury, essentially, with the backs going down. And it's, you know, you're pretty thin. Sometimes running backs get a little dinged up and can't finish a game. That happens. It's a tough position. It takes a lot of contact. So I am imagining that maybe Tyson Williams does get called up, possibly. I wouldn't rule that one out at all. And a lot of people were upset that the Ravens kind of had this four-back rotation, but now you've got a couple guys. I mean, you got a speed guy, you got a power guy, and Justice Hill's no slouch. He did some things last year. He hasn't really been able to crack the lineup necessarily this year. Feels like he was probably in the plans for next year with Dobbins. Edwards is a free agent at the end of this year, so we're not sure, but these guys are going to get a chance to prove things. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm excited to see Justice Hill considering the kind of ferocity that he was playing with on special teams. And he's gotten a few snaps offensively, and it's tough to get snaps in a really talented running back room with guys that want the ball and need that stuff. So he's going to be that third down back, that back that goes into that splits out wide. He does that quite a bit. They use him in motion, and maybe we see some jet sweeps, some pop passes, some things like that. But overall, it's tough. I don't know. Who knows? Brandon Williams somehow, what were they doing? Messing around in the locker room for a couple minutes and, you know, their bracelets ding and keep track, and then Brandon Williams can't play football. So it's COVID's world right now, and we're living in it, unfortunately. And the Ravens, again, they just have to make do. The excuses are stale. The excuses are tired. And you've got two running backs that have had success in this league. Gus Edwards is among the league leaders in yards per carry since he was called up from the Ravens practice squad back in 2018. It's been a bruising back. Justice Hill, a guy who has endless potential, was a burner at Oklahoma State. Feels like he put on some muscle, added some physicality to his game, got hardened by special teams a little bit, hopefully, and might be able to be a contributing factor. So I don't think that, you know, it would be great to have Dobbins. Ingram hasn't been very strong. I've really hated his usage lately in terms of really just running him on first down into a pile of dust and getting a yard or two and putting yourself in second and long. So maybe that's a crutch that's taken away and is a tendency breaker, but you sure would like to have Dobbins coming off a strong performance. So this point that it's got a role and play, it is what it is. I personally, as much as maybe, you know, there might be some silver linings to delaying this Ravens game, I love watching football on Thanksgiving. It is one of my favorite days of the entire year. I look forward to it every year. That nightcap game, you know, you get to sit down, enjoy some time and watch some damn football on Thanksgiving. And this year it was Ravens. I've been excited for it all year. So I'm happy they're still playing. I'm happy. I'm excited. Even if the Ravens walk away with a defeat, it happens. But in the end, it was supposed to be played. And I'm happy that it is being played. You know, the NFL could be gone this year. Could have gotten even worse. The situation could have gotten out of hand. There could be more people. There could be more dire situations. So trying to take a positive spin there. And hopefully they just don't get embarrassed.
Yeah, positivity is always good, and this game is going to be a good one. You know, regardless, you mentioned if the Ravens, you know, go out with a loss or anything like that, hopefully they just don't get embarrassed. But we'll head into our first break here, and when we get back, we'll be talking about the Ravens' 30-24 overtime defeat that they took at the hands of the Tennessee Titans, talking about the Ravens' offense versus the Titans' defense, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Taser is on a mission to help you protect yourself and your loved ones safely. The Taser Strike Light combines the usefulness of a high-intensity flashlight that repels attackers with the protection of a 50,000-volt stun gun. Taser is available without a permit in most U.S. states. Get the Taser Pulse Plus or Taser Strike Light at Taser.com with promo code NFL. Save 15% now at Taser.com, promo code NFL, spelled T-A-S-E-R.com, promo code NFL. Restrictions apply. See site for details. And we return with our second segment of this Locked On Ravens Taco Tuesday edition. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, for this Ravens offense in their 30-24 defeat that they took at the hands of the Tennessee Titans, it seemed like they were clicking, and then all of a sudden, they were not. It seemed like in the fourth quarter and overtime, the play calling just got really different. The lead was kind of, points were getting shaved off of the lead, and Baltimore started to play I don't even know what the word would be for it, but they did not finish this game on offense when there were plenty of opportunities to, both in the red zone and with missed opportunities. So let's start with Lamar Jackson, who finished 17 of 29 for 186 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. Also had 13 carries for 51 yards. Spencer, what did you see out of Lamar Jackson on Sunday against the Titans?
I saw a lot of good, not a lot of great. There was a couple, you know, good plays he made. He's able to fire a ball to Mark Andrews on 3rd and 10 early in this game, able to kind of bail him out a few times. But overall, there's just been a struggle with timing in the passing game. My, you know, kind of string of events is that this line gets banged up. Lamar starts to kind of get a little antsy in the pocket, feels like he's thinking about the pocket a bit. He's been hesitating a lot. He's late. He's really late on a lot of throws. He has Marquise Brown splitting kind of deep against zone coverage, and he doesn't throw the ball in the break. He waits a split second. And unfortunately, the Ravens were at about the 30 and not the, you know, the four, their own 40-yard line. Because Marquise Brown had space, and he had to slow up to reach the back of the end zone. A DB is able to recover. And Brown, who has kind of clearly showed that he's not going to be a physical presence as a wide receiver at all. And people want to say, oh, he's 5'9". Well, size is not a skill. You know, there's guys like Tariq Cohen. There's guys like Steve Smith. There's guys that hit above their weight class. That's kind of excuses to me. And he is not able to fight back to the ball, but I'm not putting that on Brown. I'm putting that on Lamar. And then there's another one where late in the game, 3rd down, Mark Andrews is kind of finding a seam on a crossing route and was having a good game. And haven't gotten to look at the all 22, doesn't come out until tomorrow, but it kind of appeared that Lamar was on him for a little bit and then just waited. You see him clutch the ball a little bit, and by the time he clutched, instead of letting the ball go, his feet are behind Andrews, his shoulders are not square to Andrews. He does not lead Andrews to the sideline. He puts it over top of him, and it would have required a freakish catch for Mark Andrews to be able to adjust and make a play. He's expecting to get led to the sideline, and Lamar was not able to compensate and ends up being late there. I initially thought that the Ravens early on had a kind of a pop pass ordeal, or not a pop pass, but like a rollout run fake that was actually designed to get Mark Andrews in the end zone. And I thought that one might have been late, but I just rewatched that one right shortly before we started recording, and kind of was just good recovery by Kevin Byard. And, you know, Andrews wasn't able to fight back to the ball, and Andrews did draw one illegal contact in this game, but there's just no PIs. There's been, I don't think there really were in this game necessarily. I didn't see anything egregious so far, at least, but the ball just has not been bouncing right. Marquise Brown has a big drop, and the timing is just off in this offense. And again, I think going tempo is good. The thing that I did really like was some of those underneath quick throws, just having the receiver turn back to the quarterback, which is called a quick, and getting the ball out there and taking advantage of cushion, just taking what the defense gives you, not letting them force you into doing the same thing and kind of working and, you know, hitting a nail into a piece of wood that never goes anywhere by just continuously going where they want you to go, throwing underneath, utilizing some outside stuff. Lamar wasn't really able to connect on a lot of stuff to the right outside, but a couple nice throws. I think the throw to Mark Andrews on the 31-yard touchdown was outstanding. And I think it was outstanding because it was in rhythm. The timing of the throw was great. And he leads Andrews back in bounds and kind of puts enough air under it so that Andrews can turn back. And that's the kind of stuff we're looking for. So I think moving forward, it is just timing for Lamar. And like I mentioned that Texans game, him and Deshaun Watson have had some similar issues as far as inconsistency, kind of, you know, people make excuses about the talent around them and some changes and things like that. And I think that Deshaun Watson's played really, really well this year overall, and he's been really consistent. And I think the reason for that is getting the ball out on time, quick, at the top of your drop. And eventually, you know, you can go through these phases where you lose trust in your receivers and, you know, you don't expect them to make a play. But if you don't trust them to make a play, then they're never going to. You kind of have to put it in their hands. And that's playing quarterback. That's being a ball distributor. So feels like maybe, you know, Mark Andrews is the only guy that he truly trusts. And he still was late to him maybe once or twice. So just getting the ball out earlier. He sees it. He's just got to trust it. And can't hesitate. I think that there's been a little bit of hesitation as a result of the offensive line, and it's holding the offense up a little bit. And like I said, I mean, I don't think he played poorly. I don't think that he has played poorly this year overall. Some unfortunate circumstances have happened, some untimely drops at times, some untimely snaps. But at the end of the day, you know, elevate above it, make the perfect throw, be perfect, go strive for greatness. You're never going to be perfect, but keep at it.
Yeah, I personally saw a lot of good things with Lamar Jackson as well. Of course, a few throws, as you mentioned, that he probably would have liked to have back. But for the most part, I do think Jackson played pretty well. But one area where the Ravens offense definitely struggled, Spencer, was in the red zone. Baltimore, from a touchdown perspective, went 1 of 4. And Tennessee's red zone defense coming into this one was the 28th ranked unit. They allowed touchdowns on 74% of red zone drives. And so, Spencer, I wanted to get your opinion on why the Ravens offense struggled to finish drives so much in the red zone, because if they put a touchdown on the board on just one of those three missed opportunities where there is, you know, a short Justin Tucker 27-yard field goal, a 30-yard field goal, a 29-yard field goal, the Ravens probably win this game. So, Spencer, why did the Ravens offense struggle in the red zone so much?
Feels like guys are unsure of their assignments. And I go back to that point of getting guys in the game and keeping them in there and letting them get into a rhythm and get the freaking start sweating and hitting some guys and feeling it. And that's, you know, not exactly high level hashtag analysis, but it just seems like guys aren't exactly sure of the spacing. They aren't exactly sure of where they're supposed to be aligned. And they're having some trouble there. And I can speculate on why that's happening. To me, it feels like because there's so many substitutions and they take so long to get plays in. The system is that Roman calls the play down to a translation onto Lamar Jackson's mini Bible wristband, mini dictionary wristband on his wrist that is enormous and has very fine print. Lamar has to kind of scan on that, find the call, call the call. And by the time they get through with that process, there's, you know, 20, 15, 10 seconds on the play clock. And the Ravens also use the highest rate of motion ATS at the snap of any team in the NFL, actually, by a wide margin. They use it on about 36, 37% of snaps, and the next closest is like 29. That's the same margin between the second place and 11th place team. So long story short, you're taking a while to get your play call in, and then you're orchestrating a motion at the snap. That only leaves you a couple seconds to really kind of scan. Guys are unsure of the alignment, who's got to be off, who's got to be on. That's resulted in some illegal formations, guys not covering the tackle. Too much. And on top of it, I don't think there's creativity in the red zone. And the Titans kind of have this very misdirection, easy read red zone offense. And we've seen it beat the Ravens twice now. Jonu Smith, they have on a leak route early on, and he's able to cruise around and make a play. And last year, I mean, they're doing things like Henry having a pop pass or getting Jonnu Smith on a switch route and sending him up the sideline, and he's able to make a play. So I just don't think the Ravens are doing a great job in the red zone of taking the pressure kind of off Lamar Jackson. They want him to basically run around and make a play. And that's kind of some schoolyard BS, and it's not high level. I think that you have a guy like Gus Edwards, you have a guy like J.K. Dobbins, sometimes just hammer them four times in a row. And that's when you can impose your will, I think, in the condensed area. And a guy can find a seam, get 7 yards, and that's a huge gain in the red zone, especially in goal to go. So getting to the line, running some tempo, maybe dropping the motion in the red zone and not cutting yourself off, kind of rolling to one side or doing a wide play all the time or things like that, or maybe just using some jet sweeps, some end arounds, some things like that, and combine that with the run game and just kind of simplify things down there instead of making that the Lamar Jackson show and everybody else is kind of roaming around aimlessly at times. So some of that does fall on Jackson, but at the same time, when the plays come in so late, it doesn't leave a lot of time. It doesn't leave a lot of room to read for him to read the leverage, understand where the DBs are and where they're probably going to spot drop and things like that. So at this point, you'd like to see him just trim the fat overall, and especially in the red zone.
Yeah, the Ravens were certainly punished for, I guess, getting too cute in the red zone and not having that creativity. You know, you talk about even if it's there's a first down marker at the 9-yard line or a first down marker at the 4-yard line, being able to get the necessary yardage to pick up that first down to have 3 more cracks at the end zone or 4 more cracks, whatever it may be, that's also extremely important. So getting those play calls in, as you mentioned, Spencer, I think would be a really good thing if Baltimore is able to do that just a little bit quicker. We're going to head into our final break now, and when we return, we'll be flipping the field and talking about the Ravens defense, who were ultimately unable to hold Derrick Henry and the Titans offense in check at the end of the game. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do. Break through your wall, whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Go every day. Visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. And we return with our final segment of this Locked On Ravens Taco Tuesday edition episode. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, as we flip the field and get into Baltimore's defensive performance against the Tennessee offense in Week 11, this seemed like a game where, for the most part, through the first three quarters, Baltimore's defense had the Titans' number. They were getting pressure on Ryan Tannehill. They were stopping Derrick Henry. But then as the fourth quarter began to wear on, this defense looked extremely tired. They were not finishing tackles, a pretty horrible tackling performance overall. And then once you get into overtime with Derrick Henry, it's very, very hard to stop him. Spencer, why did the Ravens' defense falter in the fourth quarter and overtime, and why were they unable to finish this game off?
Felt like the defensive line was thin. They only had four defensive linemen active on game day. Wolf was really strong for the most part. The first half and through the first three quarters, and guy who hasn't been taking, you know, those full game heavy usage rotations or snap counts. And you've got Justin Ellis in there, a guy who he's a backup, man. He's not Brandon Williams. He wasn't commanding double teams. He was getting beat in one-on-ones, and Matabuike kind of is still getting his legs under him against the run game. And, you know, at this point, I haven't seen anything egregious, but I also haven't seen anything from him that really stood out in the run game. So I'm not sure that he's filled out yet in terms of his IQ against the run. And what does that lead to? When you have a nose guard in and he's not commanding a double team, that means that there's an extra blocker. And where is that blocker going to go? He's going to go to the second level. And Patrick Queen really struggled in this game. He's really struggled the last 2 weeks. Too much on his plate right now, it feels like. And he does have a big hit. It feels like he's had a few splash plays here and there, but isn't a guy that shows a prowess for getting off of blocks from, you know, incoming guards and combo blocks and guys working to the second level. The Ravens really struggled to tackle. And to me, in the end, you know, people talk about Derrick Henry and the run game, but Derrick Henry had, you know, he ends up running the touchdown at the end. They're already in field goal range. You know, maybe he just runs for 7 yards or 4 yards instead. And Gostkowski probably puts one in, felt like he was kicking well yesterday. Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey got toasted, man. They got beat a lot. Chuck Clark wasn't able to break up anything against the tight ends. He had some okay coverage. And then with the game on the line, the Titans drive down. It's you know, third down. And A.J. Brown basically rips their spine out. And Marcus Peters can't get him down or really even tie him up. Marlon Humphrey kind of comes in too hot, runs right by him. Touches him with one hand. Chuck Clark misses a tackle. And the most demoralizing part of it was just seeing A.J. Brown, a massive, physical, well-rounded, successful receiver that you didn't take in the first round when you had your pick of the litter of all the wide receivers. And watching him against your first-round starting Mike linebacker in a stalemate, just bully him into the end zone. It was an imposition of wills. You heard Dobbins after the game. You heard Wolf after the game. You heard Lamar Jackson after the game. The Titans wanted it more, and the Ravens just, they are choking late in games. They can't get the stop. They can't, you know, do it. They barely held off the Eagles. They were able to kind of stuff a messed up read option down there. But other than that, this defense in these late game situations has been so up and down. In the Steelers matchup earlier a couple weeks ago, they, you know, the Ravens score a go-ahead touchdown. The Steelers march right back down the field and score another touchdown. And then it's back on the offense again. And guys are out. I mean, Calais Campbell in this game makes a huge difference. The interior pressure presence is gone without Campbell. That's why they signed him. He's mobile. He occupies two gaps with length and technique and explosiveness and just his overall IQ as a veteran that's been really successful. And this defense just wore down really late. And like I said, you know, the tackling was an issue, very much so. A lot of missed tackles in the secondary. And to me, the secondary lost this game. Marcus Peters routinely got turned around by Corey Davis. It's not just on the players at all. I think that Wink has this fascination with running these man blitzes where his corners play off. And when you play off, it kind of means that you have to break with the first stem. And that opens up some, you know, not necessarily double moves, but some longer developing routes that have a little bit of nuance to them. And Corey Davis and A.J. Brown just gashed the Ravens whenever they needed it. And, you know, Firkser had a couple big catches, and Jonnu Smith had a conversion earlier in the game down in the red zone. He's able to take, a second or third down in 7 or 8 and on a drag route, and just no one can get him down. So it just feels like the Ravens defense lacks size and sand in the pants and, you know, fortitude in these late game situations. And I was pretty disappointed with Marlon Humphrey's early defensive pass interference, and then, you know, unable to really make a play in this game. You've got your $140 million corners, and they, you know, didn't make a play in the passing game all day long, and was just a poor effort. Probably the worst effort of this Ravens secondary so far in 2020, in my opinion. And they lost the game.
Yeah, Spencer, I completely agree. And I've been long critical of the, you know, playing off versus press. And I think Baltimore plays off a little too much. And it's with these blitzes, they're going in the same rush lanes. And even we saw pressure dialed up by Wink Martindale in this game on Sunday, where he would send seven guys and they would get no pressure and left Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey exposed to these cutback routes and to this and that. And you would think when you have $140 million corners, like you mentioned, they'd be able to hold their own, but it was just not a great day for the secondary in general. But Spencer, I do want to end on a little bit of a positive note. And you mentioned Derek Wolfe and the impact he had, but who were some other Ravens that impressed you in this game against Tennessee on defense? And what encouraging signs does that show you moving forward?
The edges, man, the edges. Pernell McPhee wasn't really a standout in this one necessarily, but he's been playing at a consistently high level. He, you know, gets a pretty bush league roughing the passer where he hits Tannehill essentially in his gut as the ball is coming out. That is what it is. You can't, you know, change the refs, but that one stunk. Other than that, it was a lot of positive. Matt Judon played really disciplined football in this game. There was a big late in the game, I believe it was a second or third down, and the Titans kind of run a play action with a slide, and they have a split zone. Jonnu Smith come back, and Judon backs up into coverage so that Smith couldn't engage him. Smith works back into the offensive line. Judon comes flying back in, crushes Tannehill. So a good job kind of playing the chess game with the blocker and then closing with athleticism and speed. And Ngakoue was a menace, especially in the first half. He was really working. Sam Barillo, the left tackle of the Titans, has the strip sack. And, you know, that ball takes one big bounce, one oblong bounce, obtuse bounce up in the air. Maybe it falls into the lap of somebody and ends up in the end zone for the Ravens. And I think Ngakoue kind of proved that when he smells blood, he can really get after it. And unfortunately, the Titans weren't forced to throw the ball in that capacity or use a straight dropback game. They started aiding out on that. And then Tyus Bowser is a huge interception. I don't think he played a ton of snaps in this game. I think he was around 17 snaps or something of the sort. But he looks like the Ravens' best coverage linebacker in those shallow hooks and things like that. And he's been letting the game come to him, playing really naturally. And I think that those guys played well. Jalen Ferguson didn't really have a great game. But other than that, the edges were strong. Wolf, of course, was a presence inside. But he, you know, like I said, he's just not used to that, you know, 80, 90% snap usage. That wasn't why the Ravens signed him, but with the other two down, Campbell and Williams, he had to, and wore down a bit, but he had an overall really strong game. Deshaun Elliott continues to prove that he's a physical presence, and we haven't really seen him make the splash plays on the back end yet, but we also haven't really seen him blowing a lot of assignments. So I'm overall pretty pleased with Elliott. Other than that, you know, up and down performances from guys, and those were the standouts for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought that the edge players really showed that even if one of these guys leaves in free agency, whether it be Ngakoue, whether it be Judon or Bowser, I think they'll be able to get back one or two. It's probably going to be a choice between Ngakoue and Judon. I think that's what most people are preparing for. But the overall, without Campbell, without Williams, the run defense suffered, and that was apparent. But I do think there were some positives in this game. And these young guys, you know, you mentioned Deshaun Elliott, they'll be able to grow with the rest of this season. Spencer, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for once again coming on the show. And a happy Thanksgiving to you, an early Thanksgiving. And hopefully this game between the Ravens and the Steelers will live up to the hype and it'll be a good one.
I hope so. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well, Kevin. Happy Thanksgiving to all the Locked On Ravens listeners. Make sure to gobble in those iTunes review charts for Kevin. He does a great job bringing you the best daily Ravens coverage. And that does it for me. So I'll talk to you guys this time next week.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Spencer. I'm going to get back here tomorrow. We'll be answering your questions with Cole Jackson and getting into everything relating to Ravens football. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you tomorrow.